Hello and welcome to Baylor Connections, a conversation series with the people shaping our future. Each week we go in depth with Baylor leaders, professors, and more, discussing important topics in higher education, research, and student life. I'm Derek Smith, and our guest today is Carlos Colon. Carlos Colon is a composer, liturgist, and cultural promoter who serves as Assistant Director of Worship and Chapel in Baylor Spiritual Life. Colon was born in El Salvador, where at age 14 he was forced to leave his native country as a refugee, eventually settling in the United States. Colon's music has been performed around the world, and his experiences as a Civil War refugee inform his compositions. Looking forward to learning more about your story and how your background influences the work you do as a musician and here at Baylor. Carlos Colon, welcome to Baylor Connections. It's great to have you here.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
Well, let's just go back. We talked about your upbringing a bit in El Salvador. Take your life inside your world as a child and a young man. What was it like growing up there?
Yes. Well, at the beginning, you know, I grew up in a small town. When I talk sometimes about my growing up, it's probably what people say, how life in the U.S. might have been 75 years ago or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, because we were a little behind. But I grew up in a town called Chalchuapa, which in our native tongue means River of Jade. And it's actually the oldest settlement in the American continent and or the Western Hemisphere, really. And when I, growing up there, it was just a very peaceful little town surrounded by hills. This is a little village that the Spanish have founded probably more than 500 years ago as a city, probably 200 years ago. But there have been people there living continuously before the Spanish came, say maybe for 3,000 years before they came. So I like to say that, and I grew up surrounded by mystery. Our town was very religious, but we also had around us the ruins of Mayan subcultures. And those would be our playgrounds, you know, mm-hmm. going up a pyramid here and there. Wow. You know, I never thought that would be, out of the ordinary, but it was. And so it was a peaceful little town, you know, a little lake in the middle of that. And so that's how growing up was until about age 12 when the war, you know, started.
In the war, I want to talk to you about that and its influence on you, but I'm curious to set that up a little bit. What was your church background? What was church life like for you as a young man in El Salvador?
That's a great question. I grew up as, at the time, you know, probably 98% of the population in a Catholic family. And since I can remember, even at a time, you know, in the late 60s when I think some of the revolutions that were going on in the U.S. and Europe, you know, were reaching to us. And so it was an age of unbelief in some way, you know. But even at that time, people who know me as a little kid, who knew me as a little kid, and my mother and other relatives seemed to say that I had a bent towards that mystery and towards the things of God. And very early on, I tried to be very devout and going to the Catholic Church. And I can look back and I receive a lot of formation, for which I'm more appreciative now probably than when I was as a kid. At age 12, I started attending a Baptist church that was a very cohesive and just sweet group of people. And there was a pastor there who became a father figure to me. And that was my beginning of walking with the Baptists. As a little child, I remember hearing some Texas Baptist missionaries, actually, who came to our town to do music, to do some preaching, and being impacted by the way They spoke of Christ and they spoke of the scriptures. And that I have vivid memories of being in a tent revival, actually, and just being deeply moved by the words of Christ and the cross, at the cross, you know, in the songs that they sang.
Did music play a role in your love of faith in the church, or does that something that when you were a youngster, or did that come later?
Yes. When one of the unique things about, I think, attractive things about this community, the Baptist community I mentioned earlier, is that they sang with a lot of heart. And there was a level of, as I look back, of discipleship that came through the songs that we sang. There would be, strangely, you know, there would be a lot of psalms set to music. And even today, and we'll get, maybe when we talk about how lament and worry informs my music, that has become important for me today. But even back then, I was being formed, you know, by the church through the songs that we sang and the prayers that we sang. And I guess something important that I had discovered in retrospect, now that I'm in a more academic setting as Baylor, is that I realized that that for many, many years, for generations, Baptists also sing their beliefs. You know, some people go to might be in a tradition where maybe we recite a creed, or we find ways of affirming our faith at our worship gatherings. But usually, Baptist groups have found a way of doing that through song. You know, this is what we believe. And I think that very, very important of my formation as a young Christian to be at the church and not only to pray and praise through song, but also to be formed because we were singing our beliefs.
We are visiting with Carlos Colon, Assistant Director of Worship and Chapel in Baylor Spiritual Life. Could you have ever imagined that worship would play a role in your life, the world's largest institution of Baptist institution of higher learning at some time like that?
Certainly not when I was growing up. You know, Derek, I remember being one day in my living room in El Salvador and thinking there were already rumors of war, and thinking and hearing that some people in other parts of my country had to leave their homes. And I just would think, that would be crazy. You know, this is where my family has been for generations. I am never going to leave, you know. And yet, yes, here many years later, you know, I find myself here at Baylor University, being part of the chapel team that has an opportunity, really, that is a treasure of an opportunity, and this is the opportunity to worship together and to lead students in worship. And I still sometimes it still feels a little surreal to be quite honest, because not only for the background, but because also the fact that later during my teen years I would be several times in situations in danger where I could have lost my life, and so here I am, and with a sense of gratitude for this opportunity, and also the opportunity that God has placed in my life to be shaped by worship, and God willing to be a part of shaping others in worship as well.
You've alluded to those seminal events of your youth, the war in El Salvador. When did that take place, and what was the genesis of the conflict?
The genesis of the conflict might have started probably when the 500 more than 500 years ago, or maybe even before that. We sometimes, you know, we like to say, well, you know, the conquest of Latin America was very violent, but also our peoples were very violent. You know, they were warriors warring and making war against each other. So there is a seeds on the conflicts and the way the conquest was laid up with the powerful, you know, oppressing the ones who were who had lesser means. But that went on and I think exploded in the 20th century in places like El Salvador and other Latin American countries, where it became obvious that there was a deep problem in a deep relationship in the poverty of our peoples and in the way that power was distributed among so many. You know, we really didn't have any flourishing democracies in Latin America in the 20th century. There might be a couple of exceptions or countries who experienced it for a period of time. So that's the history there. But it was in the 1970s that things exploded in El Salvador when a coalition of probably a mixed group of democracy seekers and Marxists coalesced, united together, and what it ended up being an attempt at a violent revolution.
You mentioned hearing rumors of fighting elsewhere in El Salvador and that people were leaving. How do you remember beginning to actually experience the war itself in your own life?
There was, as the political situation heated up, the right-wing government, the military government that we had at the time, started doing illegal assassinations of people, having groups that we call then we call them death squads, getting people out of their houses at night, killing them. I remember one morning getting up and outside in my street, in each block, there was a decapitated body. And every, you know, this is when I was 11, 12. Oh. And just at that moment, knowing that death, destruction, persecution, violence, conflict, you know, was literally at our doorstep.
Mm-hmm. What eventually led you all to flee first to Guatemala and then eventually to the U.S.?
So it became very, very obvious that several people in my family were in danger. My mother had really never been, I would say, exactly a Marxist, but she had been an activist, you know, with the teachers' union. And being in a small town, more like a village, some people had not forgotten my mother's deeds of her youth, over her younger years. And she started receiving death threats. And as a precaution, because I was younger, I was at an age nearing 15 years old when I could be recruited either by the Marxist guerrillas or the army, she sent me preemptively to Guatemala City. And then she and the rest of her family were able to escape to the United States. They came on a visa, and then, but that night that my family escaped, a death squad broke into our house.
Wow.
And we were just hours ahead of them.
Wow. What are your vivid memories of life as a refugee, as you kind of awaited to see where you're going to resettle?
When I talked to my family about those years, I said, you know, they were the most difficult years and the best years in some ways, you know, kind of that idea of the best and the worst collapse into one. And they were difficult because I was 5 years without my immediate family. They were the best years because I learned to see the church as my mother, and I met so many good people, people at a couple of Baptist churches in Guatemala City, who model the presence of Christ and the protective love of the Father to me as a congregation. And I was able to experience, in a sense out of necessity, the fact that the church is my family. And just come at the end of that experience as a refugee, having received immense blessings and having been shaped by a church that taught me what it is to love others and how to respond and what is that love requires of me when we see people going to in need, when you know, through needs and through trials.
This is Baylor Connections. We are visiting with Carlos Colon, Assistant Director of Worship and Chapel in Baylor's Spiritual Life. Along the way, music, those seeds that you remember as a child and growing up began to take deeper root in your life. Was it in that time that music really became more than just an interest but a calling, or when did that happen for you?
Yes, it was indeed in Guatemala City. When the first year that I came to Guatemala, I was not able to continue my high school studies. So I was able to focus on music, and I found a couple of music teachers who invested in me. The church was without a pianist, so I had the motivation of trying to learn the piano and trying to learn as quickly as possible so that I could help the church. And it was at that church that eventually also joined a youth group, a youth ensemble, and where I had opportunities to serve in music at the same time that I was being formed.
Mm-hmm. When did composing enter the picture for you? Now, you've done some laments, some pieces of memory. How did that come together for you?
My first, going back to El Salvador, my first pastor was a songwriter. And Pastor Reverend Valiente is your last name. Reverend Valiente will often share some of his songs. And a lot of those songs were psalm settings. And some of them were some of the difficult psalms, like the psalms of lament. And so it was then that I never... Years later, and it happened when we came back to Waco after having been through graduate school at Baylor, that it happened that I started writing music to lament the war that, thanks be to God, had already ended in El Salvador. And several years later, I set a requiem or the text of the requiem, which are prayers for the dead, in the liturgical tradition of the church, and I set that to music, and I wrote a musical requiem in memory of the victims of war in the South, one particular massacre that occurred during the war. Is commemorated in this composition. And this led to other opportunities and to people pointing out that there was a need for composers and songwriters to help the church lament for the things in the world. You know, we think sometimes, for example, when we read the Psalms, most people connect the word Psalms to praise and, you know, adoration, which is, of course, is there, but there is a lot. That's what the most vivid memories of elements of the Psalms are those moments when it says, you know, "Oh Lord, my God, how majestic is your name." But also about half of the Psalms deal with lament, places where God puts words in our mouth that can literally pray back to him and say, "How long, O Lord?" like Psalm 13 does. Or, you know, "Woe is me that I live among violent people," like Psalm 120. And interestingly enough, several times at Baylor, we're called to lament for so many wrong things that happen in our world. For example, when there is a shooting, or when people die through a catastrophe, a natural disaster. So at those times, I find that I have had some experience walking with people and walking myself in situations of distress, and interestingly enough, then God now is using my experience so that we at the worship team at Baylor, Dr. Richardson, Dr. Burleson, so that all of us can be ready to lead Baylor, the students, often the Waco community, in prayer and in the midst of challenging times.
We are visiting with Carlos Colon. And Carlos, we're heading into the final couple of moments of the program. You know, you talked about the Requiem you wrote, and I know that was performed on national stages in El Salvador. Many people have been able to hear and appreciate them. What has writing those taught you, and maybe by extension the students you work with, of the role that music can bring in bringing about healing, or maybe at least a sense of peace in the midst of things that are anything but peaceful sometimes?
Yes. I find that, and often almost every time we do this, we do services, special worship services at Baylor, sometimes at our beautiful Armstrong Browning Library, or other worship spaces. When we do this, we always involve in students, faculty. And what we find is that, and what is important is that we find that, yes, the scriptures gives us language to lament, but many times in these places of lament, there is always a turn into hope. And I think at the end, what we want to do as Christians and as a Christian university, as Christians who walk together at a Christian university, is to remember that Jesus Christ is the hope of this world. And that in this, in the language of the scriptures, in the language of prayer, in the language of the Christian tradition, there is healing for us and for the world. And this shapes and inspires what we do. This is why we get up every day.
Well said. Well, Carlos Colon, I wish we had more time. There's so much more we could explore, but we are out of time. Thank you so much for joining us and sharing your story with us. We appreciate that very much. Carlos Colon, Assistant Director of Worship and Chapel in Baylor Spiritual Life, our guest today on Baylor Connections. I'm Derek Smith. A reminder, you can hear this and other programs online, baylor.edu/connections.